let's go to the hotline and welcome to the show.
This guy would have sold it.
Tom, absolutely. This is my new best friend, Tom Green. Tom, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Mike, how are you, man? That was fun the other night.
That was fun. I feel so much better that we have made peace, you and I, even though I'm sure you have not given it one thought over the entire time. I just felt bad, and I was glad that I got to shake your hand and we're friends again.
Yeah, no problem, man. It was cool getting to hang out. I had a great time at the show the other night. You set it off for us on stage there at the Hard Rock.
Had you done shows with Steve-O and Tom Arnold before?
I've done shows with Steve-O quite a bit, actually. We did shows out in Vegas at the Hard Rock, actually. But I'd done a couple of... I think I did one show maybe once with Tom Arnold in L.A. at the Laugh Factory once for a... It was actually for a George Carlin birthday party thing that was happening a couple of years ago to celebrate his life. But it was the first time we've all three done a show together. It was cool.
Were you surprised? I was surprised how long-winded Tom was. Tom needs a one-man show. He's got a lot of stories.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he's been in the business a lot longer than Steve-O and I, and he's met everybody, so it was cool to listen to some of those stories for sure.
You know that.
And last night, I'm having fun out here in Port Charlotte. Well, it's a nice little town.
Port Charlotte, Tom, is at the Comedy Zone. I saw that a ton of people posted a picture on Twitter from last night's show. It's hard enough to do a Sunday show, let alone a Monday show, so we're trying to get the word out that Tom will be there again tonight to go there and check it out. How was the crowd? Was it good last night?
Oh yeah, it was great, man. It was actually. I did two shows last night, and I'm doing one show tonight. And the shows were packed, and it was amazing.
It's very fun.
Really kind of cool.
It's very fun. You do a good job. Your stand up's funny, and I don't think anybody knows what to expect when they come see you. Steve-O said it on the show on Friday. He goes, "When you see Tom, you expect it to be just one long awkward moment the whole time."
Right, yeah.
And he's like, "And it's surprisingly funny," which I agree. It was very good. Can I ask you a couple of questions? Because we've never had you on the show before, so I want to ask you. So you did the public access show first, and then who found you to get you to MTV?
Oh yeah, we're going way back.
Way back. Give me. This is the first time we really had you on the show. I got questions.
Yeah, sure. I started the public access show in Canada. It was in Ottawa, Canada.
How old were you?
I was like actually started doing college radio. So basically, I was doing radio when I was in high school on the university station, and it was when I was like 17 years old. I was doing stand-up when I was 15 up in Canada. So basically, since I was a kid, doing all this nonsense. But then when the show was on MTV, I started the show when I was 24. I took broadcasting, television broadcasting in school, in college. And then we did the show in Canada for 5 or 6 years on a public access station. That was where I basically did most of the pranks that really ended up airing again later on MTV, like painting the parents' car with a slutmobile.
Who finds you from MTV? Do you present it to them, or does somebody say, "Hey, you've got to see this guy. This is fantastic"?
Basically, what happened was I started sending tapes to everybody. But I mean, there's a long story and there's a short story. The short story is I sent them tapes. The long story, which is I can tell pretty quickly, I ended up meeting a manager who managed like Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew and Norm MacDonald and Kimmel and a bunch of people,
right.
And Howard Lapidus, and he's a really cool guy. And they were doing Loveline on MTV at the time, and he walked our tapes into MTV for us, and people saw all these tapes. And I remember back then it was 1999 when the show went on MTV, and people didn't have video cameras really. Everyone didn't have a cell phone with a video camera in it. So, I'd been this sort of video geek that just loved making crazy pranks and shooting videos for years. So I had like 1,000 ridiculous pranks, and we showed them our favorite 10 pranks, and they said, "Do you have any more of this stuff?" I said, "Yeah, I got about 1,000 of these videos." So they basically immediately flew us to New York City, and then I've never left.
What is your US, what? So. What was your favorite? What is the one where you were like, "This is going to be the killer"?
There was a lot of them, sometimes when asked what's my favorite, I say the Slutmobile. That was the first one where we really you know, put some effort into the pre-production. You know, we got the great airbrusher to airbrush the pornography on the hood of the 1992 Honda Accord.
And hood. Your father looked so stiff, like as a person, like he had he found no humor in it whatsoever.
You know, he's a military guy. He was in the Canadian Army. Yeah, Canada has an army. So he was a captain in the Canadian Army. He looked after the tank.
Is he ever like, I'm pretty sure our son's retarded?
No, they knew it was sort of an act, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was they knew the flip side. I mean, they knew that I would then go down to the public access station and be there until 3 o'clock in the morning every night editing and you know, up shooting every day. And so I think that's why they didn't really get really mad.
Right.
You know, they were annoyed on camera. They knew that I was kind of trying to do something with my life, you know, and they were sort of supportive of that. They were supportive of that. So it was kind of they were in a conflicted situation. That's why we did a lot of the stuff where we barged into their room at like 3 o'clock in the morning because it would catch them off guard. They weren't really able to react. You know, they weren't really able to control their emotions probably because they were just tired.
Dude, some of that was so uncomfortable. Like a lot of times when I watch, I liked Viva La Bam too, and they did a lot of the stuff that you had already done, especially with your parents. And I'm not knocking it. I loved it, but I thought some of the Viva La Bam stuff looked a little too staged, whereas your stuff just seemed really real. Like, your poor parents. Like, I felt bad for yours.
I remember watching the pizza delivery thing, and that was the first time where I thought, okay, this guy may get killed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a different time. I mean, you got to keep in mind, my show was shot probably 10 years before Viva La Bam. It came on MTV right before, but it was shot 10 years before, and so it was a different world then. I mean, people really just were not expecting it. Not only was the audience not expecting it, but the people in the videos were not expecting it. I mean, no one had... This was at a time in, you know, 1994 where, you know, kids were not just walking up to people on the street with video cameras and like, sticking cameras in people's faces.
Right.
So people just did not know how to react. You know, over the course of the next, you know, 10 years, people were sort of like... almost wanting to have somebody walk up to them with a video camera, you know, parents, everybody included, especially when, you know, when my show aired, when the show ended up airing on MTV, all that stuff was shot for public access on my show, so my parents had no concept of, oh, this is going to be on MTV, or people are going to see this,
right.
Or my kid's making money, or we're making money. There was none of that. This was all just like, really angry parents mad, whereas with some of those shows that came later, people were kind of like in the back of their mind kind of rubbing their hands together because they knew they were going to be on TV and make money. You know?
We're talking to Tom Green. So your military father who put up with this whole thing, how excited were they when you went to them and said, hey, by the way, I wrote this movie or I'm going to be in this movie, Freddy Got Fingered, and you have a real movie coming out?
Yeah, no, I mean, they thought it was cool. I mean, they'd sort of, that was a couple of years after I'd already been on, you know, I'd been on Letterman a few times at that point, and they were sort of starting to get kind of used to the fact that things were working out, but we had fun making that movie, and you know, the thing, Freddy Got Fingered's got this, like, you know, cult following all around the world now, which is awesome, and people know, yeah, my shows, you know, at the Hard Rock, you didn't see my full show because, you know, it was the three-man show we were doing. So I did, like, you know, an abbreviated sort of 30-minute, you know, quick set. But my show that I'm going to do tonight, Port Charlotte, at the Comedy Zone, everyone come on out, we're going to party. I do, like, you know, over an hour, and I get into Freddy Got Fingered at the end. And it's amazing. I tour all around the world, and people know every line from that movie.
Isn't that blow your mind? I always wonder, like, when bands go overseas and you see Japanese people singing your songs, it's got to be some sort of feeling. But when you have something that you're passionate about, like Freddy Got Fingered, and people, you know, in some areas you think it might have been a failure, or some areas you'd underachieved, but then you go everywhere and people seem to know the movie, that's got to make you feel great.
Yeah, I know, it's awesome. It's vindicating because, you know, the critics weren't kind to the movie. You know, it was we purposely tried to make this insane movie.
Yeah.
You know, I sat down and I wrote it with my friend because at the time, you know, the show was a hit on MTV. Everybody was was offering us these movies, and I would read them and say, oh, I don't find this funny. You know, I don't find these comedy movies funny. I want to do something that like really messes with the system. You know, messes up the whole structure of making a movie, kind of making fun of making movies. So we wrote this insane thing, and when it came out, I think it was just a little too much for people.
Yeah.
In 2000, year 2000, people just didn't know how to handle it. And so you know, it's cool that, like, you know, 10, whatever it is, 15 years later, man, wow, 15 years later, it's crazy.
I got to tell you, I was surprised that they didn't try to franchise out Road Trip more, because I thought that movie was great. That was your perfect college funny comedy, and your part was just so great. I can't tell you how many times I have said, when we've had girls in the studio, or we might even be in own personal situations, where I said, now you kiss her. That's totally the greatest. Yeah. The greatest, now you two kiss. That's the best line ever.
Yeah. That was fun. When I stepped a mouse in my mouth, I'm the guy that sticks the mouse in his mouth in the movie.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Trust me, I know.
Yeah. So it's like, I'd never been in a movie before. You know, I never even really wanted to be in a movie.
Right.
But I was doing the show on MTV, and you know, I always wanted to do television. I was like Letterman. I loved Letterman, and I never really thought about movies. But then all of a sudden, there was this movie that got offered to me, Road Trip, and you know, there's a scene in the movie where I just have to feed the mouse to the snake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in the script that I'm not supposed to put the mouse in my mouth, right? So, you know, but I was just completely nuts back then.
Yeah.
You know, I think it confused a lot of people, because you know, I'm basically playing a character, you know, that was me,
right,
in all my shows, where I was basically trying to make everybody think that I was completely insane. Right, but it was really just a bit of a prank. But it wasn't really clearly defined that it was a prank. It was just when I would go on the Tonight Show, I would go on and, you know, drink Jägermeister until I passed out, or or, you know, come on dressed as a deer or something like that and start thrashing around on the floor, and it made no sense, right? But it was, to me, it was like a huge prank on everybody watching, essentially.
Sure, it was very Andy Kaufman like. The joke, you got the joke. And if anybody else didn't get it, too bad.
Right.
And I thought, and that's very brave. Not a lot of people have the balls to pull that off.
Yeah, it was fun, you know. And I sort of sometimes look back. I go, I can't believe that I was sort of that, you know, naive mixed with overconfident to be able to walk on the Tonight Show and just do some of the things I did. But you know, when I was on that movie set, I didn't really care, you know, that I was on a movie. I was really looking forward to getting back to the show and shooting some more pranks, right? And I ended up putting the mouse in my mouth, right?
That was it was great. I mean, you really put it all the way in your mouth.
I remember looking at Todd Phillips, the director, who, this was his first big movie. He went on to direct, you know, Old School and all the Hangover movies, and became a huge director. I remember looking at him with his mouse in my mouth, and I'm thinking, like, you know, am I doing a good job here, Todd? I mean, good. Am I a good actor, you know? Like, the mouse poop and pee dribbling down the back of my throat. You know?
Every time I see it, I'm like, if that mouse bit my tongue, I would freak out while it was in my mouth.
It's really quite amazing when I didn't actually put the mouse in my mouth. It kind of crawled into my mouth.
That's
true. It was
really
kind of a surreal thing. Like, what happened was, like, I lowered the mouse down towards my mouth, and I felt its little mousy paw reach out and grab my tongue, and it kind of was crawled into my mouth. And so I just kind of, like, let it go. And it was, I remember the feeling to this day, because, like, it kind of crawled in there, and then it just kind of curled up and sat on my tongue, and then gave off a nice little salty little pee.
We're talking
about now. Anytime, like literally at least once a week, someone comes up to me now and they say, "Hey, are you the guy that stuffed a rat in your mouth in that movie?" And I say, "No, it was a mouse, man. I'm not crazy."
Tom Green is going to be at the Comedy Zone in Port Charlotte tonight. Tom, one of the reasons we didn't have you on the show before was because of the whole Drew Barrymore thing, which you said you're cool talking about now, but now at this point, now since you're cool talking about it, I don't even want to talk about it anymore.
Did you ever?
Well, I don't go on and on about it. I just don't, you know, care as much when people bring it up.
No, I'm kidding. I'm just teasing. Did you date? Here's why I'm asking. Did you ever get any other hot famous chicks that we might know?
You know, I've kind of made a habit of like not talking about people when they're not like.
That's a yes.
No, there.
You don't have to say who it is. You could just say yes. Several hot Hollywood starlets like me.
Sure, I'll go with that.
Yeah. But you know, that's why I ask. Because think about it. I mean, here you have a guy who's putting a mouse in his mouth, dog poop on a microphone. He's weird as all hell. And you wonder if that is getting chicks, and you know about the one. But I just always thought, I bet you there's a bunch more that we don't even know about, because the number one thing that chicks dig is a confident guy, and you don't get any more confident than that. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, girls love funny people, and you know, the other thing is, like, you know, we were hanging out the other day. I mean, you know, I'm not running around bouncing off the walls when I'm not on stage, so I'm a completely different person when I'm not on stage,
yeah.
You know, I'm a little more, you know, I'm a bit more like I am now. You know, sometimes when I'm, even when I do radio, it's confusing for me to try, especially now that, you know, I have to try to find a way to, you know, bring some of the energy that I do on stage when I do stand-up into my, you know, into my radio interviews, because, you know, you want me to say something and do something funny here, but really in my normal life, I'm a little more laid back, you know?
Yeah, no,
one thing that I'm doing now, that's fun, which is kind of a really cool thing I want you to check out, too, is I want you to check out WebOvision. WebOvision is, as a broadcaster, I think you'll really appreciate this, Mike. I've built my own television studio in Los Angeles this year, and I'm doing my own independent, like, insane indie talk show. Harland Williams actually has been guest hosting it when I'm out of town. I know your buddy's one of my best friends, Harland Williams.
Yep.
And he's been guest hosting it, and then I host it whenever I'm in L.A. And this whole new kind of television, I call it WebOvision.
Yeah, I got it. I pulled up right now. I've heard about it before. I have not watched it, I'll be honest. But you've gotten, I know there's been a lot of good guests on the show. Every once in a while, I'll see some sort of something that says, hey, this guy's on Tom Green's show. But as people still respect what you did, you can still pull good guests.
Yeah, no, it's fun. We've had everyone from Steve Carell to Dan Rather on the show. You know, had Larry King, had Howie Mandel, Andrew Dice Clay, Norm MacDonald, just tons of people come do the show. And it's really ridiculous, laid-back thing. And the viewers can call in and talk to the guests on the phone. There's a phone that just rings on the desk on Skype, and you can actually be on the show. So it's kind of a hybrid of radio and a podcast and television.
How often is it air?
It's live, and we're literally, there's something live coming out of that studio 5 days a week, Monday through Friday.
Wow.
Usually around 4 o'clock Los Angeles time, so 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And you know, when I'm in Los Angeles, which is about half the time, I'm doing shows there every night, and then when I'm on the road, someone else is filling in for me. It's kind of a new thing we're doing where I have guest hosts and
doing
the thing live all the time. It's really awesome.
Well, look, Tom Green was a pioneer with his TV show before, so now with everything moving digital, WebOvision, you can see Tom there. And if you're in Port Charlotte, go see him do stand-up tonight. I saw him on Saturday. He's very funny. It was very good to meet you. I enjoyed the show. You know what, Galvin, before you, the Jesse Dupree thing where he cut your desk, was that real or was that set up?
Yeah, it was real, but people don't really understand exactly what happened there. See, for me, like, you know, as a Letterman fan,
right?
You know, just to set it up for the people that don't know what we're talking about here. There's Jesse James Dupree, the guitar player from Jackal,
the singer, yeah,
the singer. He had a chainsaw. He has a chainsaw guitar, and so he was to come on the show when I was on MTV and do a thing with his chainsaw guitar. But he ended up sawing my desk up. So, to me, this was like a perfect opportunity. You know, I was a huge fan of Letterman, and whatever people would come on Letterman and do something, you know, crazy,
right?
Letterman would get mad.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, this was, I was, this first time I was producing a show for MTV. This was the second show that I did on MTV. This was a talk show. It was called The New Tom Green Show. And, you know, we had, you know, convinced MTV to let us go get a prop house to rebuild a replica of Johnny's desk. And so it ended up costing this, like, prop the team, like, $10,000. So they had to rebuild it, out of, you know, and make it look exactly the same specifications as Johnny Carson's desk from his New York show. And
right.
And so, you know, because we were trying to replicate a certain vibe, you know, and I remember, you know, MTV was like, why don't you just buy a desk at IKEA for like $100? Look exactly like Johnny Carson's desk. They said, okay, they didn't care if it looked like Johnny Carson's desk, but they let me do it. So then we were like the first week into the show, and he came out and he sawed up the desk. And, you know, he hadn't asked the producers, you know, if he had asked the producers, hey, I want to saw the desk, maybe we would have swapped the desk out for that night or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, he just did it, which is fine. I understand, you know, I did some crazy stuff over the years. But, you know, one thing that I always had a policy with my show where if I did something, you know, crazy or whatever, I would never, like, do something that was, like, you know, and this is the difference between, I think, my comedy, and maybe it's because I'm Canadian, and a lot of comedy, is I try to avoid being mean. You know, like, I try to avoid, like, you know, I never did anything illegal, for instance. Like, I never got arrested on the show. To me, the comedy always came from pushing something to the limit, but when you really analyze, and getting people really upset, but when you really analyzed it later, I wasn't actually doing anything wrong.
Right, right, I get you.
Weird. So then it became kind of funnier, you know, it became less sort of, you know, hard-edged, mean-spirited. So, you know, anyways, for me, it was like an opportunity because you know, I got to get mad. It was like when, you know, Crispin Glover tried to kick Letterman and,
right.
You know, got mad, or when you know, Madonna called him an asshole or whatever, you know, when things went wrong on television, that was always hilarious to me. And, you know, any action just requires an adverse reaction for the comedy to really play off properly. And so I was kind of just trying to make the bit good by extending and sort of, you know, accentuating how angry I was. I wasn't really that angry.
Oh, that's good, because here we are 10 years later still talking about it. So right. Obviously it worked for you.
Oh, yeah. It's literally one of my favorite bits. Like, when I get together with people that used to work on the show back then, that's the one we always talk about. You know, it was just sort of so funny. We actually did a documentary the next week on the show about, like, the making of the desk, and we did all this slow motion music and stuff. And I mean, I have no hard feelings or anything with you know, Jesse James or whatever. Like,
Where are you guys? Where's Gyrox at, and the other guy?
Gyrox, yeah. Bill Giroux is a good friend of mine. He lives in Canada, and it's the guy that drank the coffee in the window behind the set. And Glenn, and they're doing good. They live up in Canada, and
Which one was the one that didn't like pennies, dirty pennies?
Yeah, that was Phil. That was Phil.
That was great. You know,
they never really wanted to be in show business, or wasn't really. They're like computer tech guys.
Oh, it was, yes, it's very obvious. They did not want to be there, and it was what added to the show, and then Tom would make them do horrendous things, and Gyrox didn't like dirty pennies, and Tom would take them by the handful and put them in his mouth.
Yeah.
Oh, it was brutal to watch, dude. That was funny stuff.
Yeah. No, it was cool. It was like sort of our, you know, I guess it was kind of our homage to, like, Howard Stern or something like that. You know, we love, you know, having my real friends on the show. And,
yeah.
You know, and all the good shows always incorporated other characters, like Johnny Carson had Ed McMahon, and these were, you know, Glenn was my Ed McMahon and Phil. And so we kind of, you know, we had a lot of fun. It was, I guess the element that was weird about it was this wasn't their real job, you know. It was just kind of like my parents didn't want to be on the show or didn't care. These guys were just kind of there because we were buddies, but they really had a real job back in Canada doing, you know, major computer technology stuff. So
that's right. The other guy Huplink, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. I just all coming back to me. It says your celebrity net worth is in the range of $5 million. Accurate?
No, that's not accurate. No. I won't tell you whether it's too low or too high, though.
Harlan Williams, it said $6 million, and he almost crapped his pants. Like, it almost hit it, like, right on the nose. Harlan's face looked like he had just come from the ATM and told him he had $6 million in the bank. And then when we brought it up, he was like, how did you know? Yeah, well, look.
You can't believe most of the things that you read on the internet.
No, I tend to believe it all. It makes life way more interesting. Tom Green is in Port Charlotte tonight. Go see him at the Comedy Zone. Tom, I'm glad we finally got to get you on the show and look forward to you coming back to Tampa.
Yeah, hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Great reconnecting with you, Mike, and let's do it again soon.
Enjoy.
Have fun tonight, Port Charlotte. Let's party. Actually, by the way, just before I go, I'll let you know that I'm actually... I'm doing a tour all across Florida, so I'm going to be in Orlando in the two nights, and then I'm up in Jacksonville. I don't know if you get up there, and if you're up in Jacksonville, and then Fort Walton Beach, and I'm cruising all around the state. I'm actually streaming live on Periscope every day, which is this fun new app. I'm sure you've seen it.
Oh yeah, I watched you eat a salad the other day.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm just cruising around, doing weird stuff on Periscope, and doing my show. So, everybody in Florida, great to be here. Sunshine Good. State, let's party.
All right, Tom, thanks, buddy.
All right, thanks, man.
Take it easy. There you go, Tom Green.
Steve and Julie Weintraub here for the Golden Diamond Source. If you're thinking about getting engaged, Golden Diamond Source is your one-stop destination.
Shop, compare, and save at the Golden Diamond Source.
3800 Ulmerton Road.
Or online at goldendiamondsource.com.